And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week saw a vote on the commission, on the proposal to establish a commission in the Congress to investigate the uprising and the riot on January the 6th. And, of course, the Republicans opposed it. That is to say, McConnell opposed it. The Republican leadership opposed it. And in the end, although it failed to secure the necessary votes, it got a whole lot more votes from the Republicans than you would have expected. Actually, 54 senators voted to set up the commission. You needed 60. In other words, the filibuster threat killed the commission. But in the meanwhile, you needed 10 Republicans to overcome the filibuster. You got 4. Said that they were going to vote for it had they voted, but they went home. That would have been 7.
Well, actually, you got 6 Republicans. Of those 3, 2 of them were Democrats who went home. 11 senators, despite the seriousness of this, despite the seriousness of this, 11 senators took off early for the holiday weekend and didn't vote on this. Obviously, they thought it was a foregone conclusion, but still, this is something I think you would have wanted your vote to register at.
But it wouldn't have been foregone conclusion had the 11 stayed, because
it would have been up to 57 votes.
Yeah.
The 2 Democrats that left were Patty Murray of Washington and Kristen Sinema of Arizona. And of the Republicans that left, Pat Toomey, our own Pat Toomey, who's not up for re-election, said he would have voted yes. So that was up to 57. It's still disappointing, to say the least, that these folks who were physically and personally threatened didn't have enough of a backbone to stand up for their own lives, the lives of their staffs, and moreover, the Constitution, the country. This is a black mark on the history of our republic, and certainly of whatever is left of the Republican Party, that the leader of that party in the Senate, who the day after this insurrection came in and gave an impassioned speech about how evil and terrible it was and pointing the finger at President Trump, then goes out and says, no, we don't want to investigate this any further. And in the face of the Capitol Police, who are there protecting them, the one officer who died, Sicknick, his mother went around personally to ask for votes, and she was accompanied by some of these injured officers. And of course, this is the party that goes around touting that we want to back the blue and this or that. And they just don't want information to get out about what really happened.
Well, logic tells you that they must have something to cover up.
Yes.
If they didn't have something to cover up, they would have no reason not to have an investigation. Right?
Right. And they're covering up. And we do know that there were a number of members of the House of Representatives that gave tours to some of the insurrectionists on the day before this. So you have to wonder what their
reconnaissance tours.
Yeah, well, that's what they could have been like. What their involvement is, and we're still getting investigations from the FBI on individual cases, but that's not enough. That's not enough.
Didn't your Congressman Cartwright? He played a role here, didn't he?
Yeah, I think I may have mentioned it last week, but when I was talking with him, he is the chair of the House Appropriations Subcommittee that covers the Department of Justice. And the House, the Department of Justice came for a supplemental appropriation in order to do the prosecutions. They've got over 400 prosecutions to do, and they're doing them out of Washington, D.C. And they indicated to him that they were more interested in the more egregious cases, the folks that seem to lead this and to may have planned this and may have done the more egregious acts, rather than just the ones that were not doing much more than trespassing. And Congressman Cartwright said he told them he wants everybody prosecuted to the fullest extent. He doesn't want anybody to be let off easily. And he almost doubled their request of appropriations on account of that. And he told them, go full bore. You got the money. You got the backing here. So, I mean, that's another thing about the importance of who controls the Congress. Because you can rest assured that if Kevin McCarthy controlled this, there wouldn't even be investigations. There wouldn't be money for prosecutions. They'd be starving the department there.
Well, but Kevin McCarthy doesn't control. Pelosi controls.
That's
so
correct.
So what do you think her response is going to be to the inaction by the Senate?
Well, there's a couple of committees that I think can and will investigate this unless she decides to do a select committee, which she can decide to do. But the Democrats aren't going to let this pass. At least that's my impression. I hope they're not going to let this pass. And they will have subpoena power. And, of course, the Republicans will yell politics or whatever. But, you know, and a lot of commentators are saying the Republicans are pretty stupid about this thing because the committee that was going to be formed that they voted against gave the Republicans everything they asked for. It was a 50-50 split. It was nonpartisan. The people on it would not be any sitting members of Congress. None of that would be there. Now you're going to have members of Congress doing these things. And I would hope that the committee just doesn't let these people just spout off, that they really, really do things where they hire professionals to do the questioning and to do the investigation. The Department of Justice could also perhaps set up a special prosecutor to do this as well. Again, that then looks partisan because it's controlled by Merrick Garland and the Democrats, but this has to come out. This has to come out. You know, there's the old saying, the victors write the history. And in this instance, the losers are trying to write the history. And the reason they're getting away with it is they have this great infrastructure of Fox News and Newsmax and other sites that propagandize all the time and give out false narratives and alternate facts and what have you. As a matter of fact, this week one of the polls showed that 73% of Republicans believe that it was liberals who were going after the Capitol, not the Trump people. It's inexplicable to people who have any degree of rationality, but
it'd be inexplicable to anybody who was watching television on January the 6th.
Yeah. Gaslighting is it. We all know what it was. And that's why they don't want this to come out, because they're going to find out that these folks were planning things over social media, or they're going to find out what their politics were and all sorts of things like that.
Maybe they don't care. How about this? They don't care.
Well, obviously, they don't care about the things that really they're elected to care about anymore. They're only caring about power. And
isn't that what they're elected for? Yeah. Aren't they elected to have power so that they can legislate in the interest of the people whom they really represent, which is the big corporations?
Yeah. Well, that they care about.
That they care about.
That exactly. They care about. Yeah. I mean, they, you know, a lot of these people, though, are just showboating for their own, you know, to build up their own social networks, to build up their own fundraising, to build up their own egos, to build up their own, what they can do when they leave Congress, get their own shows or do their own, you know, go on their dog and pony trips to make money. But they should be caring about things. And you mentioned that the Republicans are there to protect corporations and those in power. We see that in a couple of the things that have been are also being introduced into Congress. We have the infrastructure bill that that the negotiations are going on. The Biden plan started at a $2.2 trillion. The Republicans put together a group that reluctantly came in at a little over half a trillion dollars.
Half of 1 trillion, right, exactly.
Yeah, half of 1 trillion. Biden came down a half a trillion.
Right.
To 1.7 something.
Right.
And now the Republicans are up to 900 and some billion dollars. But the devil in the details, as you and I were talking before the show, is that how these things are going to get paid for and who's going to have to do it. The Republicans, as you mentioned, first of all, don't want to raise any new money. They want to take money from the pandemic fund that may be left over or that they don't want allocated for certain things. And the Democrats want to raise taxes on corporations and on the wealthy in order to help pay for this. The Republicans also want user fees, which means that everyday Joe has to pay for this stuff because he'd be the one that's using this stuff. And also the ideas of infrastructure are different. The Republicans only want to talk about roads, bridges, and somewhat reluctantly the internet, and the Democrats have a more expansive idea of things that include measures that help people take advantage of the infrastructure of the country. And so we have that philosophical difference going on as well.
You know, one interesting part about this is in this budget is that Biden proposes to expand access to mental health care with a $1.6 billion appropriation, which is more than double what was enacted in for the 2021 fiscal year. Now, the Republican response to gun control is always that you shouldn't have laws about gun control. You should have expanded mental health care because this is an individual problem,
right,
that can only be handled by better mental health. But they refuse to agree to increasing the expenditures for expanding mental health. So on the one hand, you can't have gun control in terms of guns. You got to have mental health. On the other hand, you can't have mental health because it can't be paid for.
Well, it's their circular logic.
That's not logic. That's just lying.
Illogic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but it always gets you back to where the starting point is.
It gets you back to doing nothing.
That's correct.
That's right.
Did you see this week where Texas passed a bill and got signed in where you can carry firearm, you don't need a permit to carry firearms.
Concealed weapon.
Concealed weapon. Yeah, you don't have to.
Right. You need a permit to drive, but you don't need a permit to have a gun.
Right.
You need insurance to have a car on the road, but you can't have a piece of paper that shows that you've been vaccinated and you don't represent a health threat to others. The one is an infringement of liberty. The other, well, that's the way you have to do it.
You know,
that's not, we're not dealing with logic here. We're dealing with power.
Yeah. And it's easier to buy a gun than it is to vote.
Nobody makes money on voting, but the gun manufacturers make a lot of money making and selling guns.
Oh, yeah. And ammunition.
That's true. That's like Gillette lowballing the price of the razor so that you make sure that you buy razor blades. Blades.
Yeah. That was King Gillette's idea back at the beginning of the 20th century.
Yeah.
With the blue blades.
Yeah.
Those things. So we've had all that. You know, and also you want to talk about infrastructure. We had more hacking came to the fore this week, again out of some place in Russia. And remember, earlier this year we found out that last year there had been major hacks of government and of private enterprises, and that's something that's really part of infrastructure that we need to be able to shore up and guard against. And again, we're not getting that from one side of the Congress.
Let me ask you this about infrastructure. For some reason, the Republicans don't like railroads. They don't want high-speed rail. They don't like it. Why is that?
Because that's
certainly the old style of infrastructure, bricks and mortar, roads, toll bridges, whatever, yeah. Railroads. Why not?
Well, because it's a coastal thing mostly, and that's the blue states. You know, we want to have the Acela line running from Boston to Washington, all blue. California from San Francisco to Los Angeles.
All right, fair enough. But so why do Pennsylvania Republicans oppose high-speed rail, oppose the expansion of rail? After all, take Scranton. If Scranton had a high-speed rail link to New York City, Scranton would be a thriving city. It would be to New York City exactly as Long Island is to New York City. Millions of people live there. They work in the city. You could have hundreds of thousands of people living in Scranton if it was only an hour from whatever the railroad terminal would be down to Manhattan, which you could have with high-speed rail.
It's not the people in Scranton. It's not the officials in Scranton. Bob Casey and Matt Cartwright have for years wanted to.
But they're Democrats.
But they're Democrats.
Yeah.
The problem is that the guys in the middle of the state, like your man, Keller and Muser and all the others that sit there in the middle of the state that aren't going to see this, don't care about it. They know that their little towns can't be connected to the rail, so why would they care?
They would see it. First of all, if Scranton, as an example, was a place where you could get into Manhattan in an hour, then any place half an hour from Scranton, you know, would have a real estate boom. Of course, it would take half an hour to get to the Scranton and then an hour into the city. Works. Susquehanna County works.
Yeah.
Susquehanna County is 20 minutes from the rail terminal if it were in Scranton.
But they don't want those kind of people to come in.
Well, that I understand. I got it. Racism prevents the development of the rural areas. I got it. But they don't say that, do they?
No.
They don't say that.
But it's what's been happening, the great separation. Remember the police officer in the O.J. Simpson case that moved to Idaho? You know,
yeah.
Like that. And I don't know if you saw that there's several counties in eastern Oregon want to join Idaho now. They want to secede.
Five counties want to join Idaho.
Yeah. The white counties want to join Idaho. Yeah. We don't want to be with Portland or those places.
No, they want to join those Nazis who colonized in northern Idaho, up in the Coeur d'Alene region.
Right. Those places.
Yeah. And, but you know what? Boise still has a lot of people and is attracting a lot of people who are not like that.
Yes. Yeah. It's one of the hot real estate markets.
Yeah.
I saw something on TV last week. I think it was on Sunday morning about Boise.
And this brings you right to another thing that you have as a fallout from Trump. I mean, all of this is really Trumpian-sponsored racism, Trumpian-enabled racism that spreads its wings everywhere, spreads its tentacles everywhere, and infects and coarsens and cheapens and debases the life of Americans everywhere. And among the things is you have a rise of anti-Semitism in the country. And, you know, you're not hit with anti-Semitism, attacks against Jews are not poor workers anymore. You're not dealing here with anything other than a middle-class population. And, you know, you're not attacking Mexicans who you can say, oh, they take low wages, they take the jobs, they're rapists, they spread disease. Here are people who were born here. They're doctors, they're teachers, they're white-collar workers, they're business people. But the racism spreads to them. And you've had an enormous growth of anti-Semitism, all attributable to the Trump sponsorship of racism. And in the last weeks, haven't we had real attention being paid to anti-Jewish racism, anti-Semitism?
Yeah, I mean, there's actually the anti-Semitism has been taking on two forms. And the one you're talking about is what Trump has created with you know, separating people, you know, the others type of thing. It starts with immigrants, and then it works its way out. And we have...
Yeah, but the first great demonstration, of course, was that. Charlottesville. Jews will not replace us.
Right. And, of course, now Tucker Carlson's on the air talking about this replacement theory. This is stuff that's been going on for years and years and years on the background, but now it's in the open. And
well, that was Trump's great innovation. That was his renovation of the Republican Party, to take their hidden racism and bring it out into the open. Take their Southern strategy, which was a strategy of centralizing Southern racists out of the Democratic Party and bringing them into the Republican Party and making the Republican Party the party of racism secretly, covertly, with
right.
dog whistles, with code words. And he says, forget about it. Let's do it openly because some of these people are too dumb to recognize the dog whistle. Let's explain it to them.
Yeah. Well, that was the Lee Atwater and the Stuart Stevens. And what they were doing was they thought they could control it. They would use these people to get into power and to play on their prejudice and to do other things. And what they realized too late was that they couldn't control these folks.
Well, von Papen could have taught them that lesson if they had really studied the German history of the 1930s. He thought he could control Hitler, right?
Yeah. And
he ended up being fired.
Yeah, and you mentioned all of the things that where Jews are in society. They're your neighbors, your professors, all this stuff. We saw what happened in Germany. They passed the Nuremberg Laws, and overnight, all these people that had been friends and colleagues certainly became verboten.
Right.
You know, people turned on them.
Right.
And this is not a new phenomenon. And what we learn, and I keep preaching to the Jewish organizations I belong to, that any time people start to divide us into us's and them's, we know who the us's are, and we know who's going to be labeled as them's and those. It's not pretty. It's not pretty. I was interviewed by a TV station this week locally about the anti-Semitism. There was a day set aside for, they called it a day of action, where they got the Anti-Defamation League and the Jewish Federations got together and had statements from a whole variety of personages about this rise of anti-Semitism. And of course, during the Trump years and even before that, we had white supremacy that was deemed as being the greatest threat. It's domestic terrorism, and they didn't want to hear it in the Trump administration. They buried that sort
but
of
they were them. They
yeah.
were them.
They were them.
Their intelligence people were telling them, you're the danger. Naturally,
right.
they didn't want to hear that.
Right. Actually, at the beginning of the Obama administration, a report came out that was commissioned during the Bush administration saying that this was a big problem. And the Republicans raised such a stink that then Homeland Security had Donna Shalala withdrew it. Was she Homeland Security? The other woman who was Homeland Security withdrew it. And it was true. It was true. And so this thing is festered and fostered. And the anti-immigration stuff, that was the guy who shot up the synagogue in Pittsburgh. He was upset about immigrants. So it continues. What we've seen...
And it didn't matter that the people in Pittsburgh weren't immigrants for the most part.
No. But what we've seen, though, the phenomenon that we've seen recently came out of the fighting in the Middle East between Israel and the Palestinians. And we've seen a lot of people on the left, pro-Palestinian people, attacking Jews on the streets of New York and L.A., attacking synagogues and conflating support for Israel with or being against Israel as being against Jews. And that also is a dangerous phenomenon that's going out there. And some of the leaders of things like Black Lives Matter have had have been a problem in the Jewish have been seen as a problem for the Jews. And other groups there.
I don't think that the Black Lives Matter is an anti-Semitic movement.
They've made a point of attacking Jews. But their leadership has had problems. Wasn't there that problem in Chicago where they wouldn't let, or that was a gay rights march. They wouldn't let Jewish gay people march.
That's not the Black Lives Movement.
No, that wasn't Black Lives Matter, but these are on the left. And these are problems that keep reoccurring. But the terrorism, the violence, mostly.
I don't think there are any leftists for the most part. I can't think of any leftists that have had advocated or engaged in violent actions against Jews in this country. I can't think of one.
There, violence, no. I think, but wording, yes. There's been
Jews as Jews.
Yeah. I think that they've done it through conflating with Israel mostly, but there have been some issues and problems there. I think that
you cannot compare that with what's going on with the right wing with the Trump people.
No, and that's the thing. They're more organized on the right, and they are more violent on that.
And it's part of their ideology.
Yeah.
I mean, we killed Christ. They want to have a Christian nation.
Well, that's the other thing, that there's a lot of information emerging about this Christian nationalism that is spurring on a lot of this movement. As a matter of fact, this week there was an article in the Washington Post about a new Bible that includes the Constitution in it.
To prove that the Constitution, which was written by deists, was actually written by Christians.
Yeah, that they wanted to have a Christian nation.
Right.
And we've seen that's been out there for a while, but it's becoming more and more prominent, and a lot of the people on January 6th, they think, have been motivated in that regard.
Well, we come to the end of our discussion today. Certainly, we had plenty of Trumpian fallout this week, and we'll probably have more next week.
Yeah.
What do you see coming up next week? Anything special?
You never know. We got to see what these prosecutions, what the grand juries in New York show about the Trump organization.
All right, so we'll look for that for next week. Speak again next week. See you next week.
Let's remember Memorial Day and what it meant for the people that fought that we would have freedoms and not undergo these Trumpian fallout.
That's right.
See you next week.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.